When the Nazis attacked Poland, my parents felt that as such, and my father was the leader in the Jewish division of the labor union, they felt that being Jewish and also under social justice position, that they would be among the first ones to be persecuted by the Nazi. So after Nazis entered, and of course, the siege of Warsaw was another very horrifying experience. But after the Nazis entered, at some time during the year of the winter of 39-40, they decided to escape Poland. And the only way for them was the Soviet Union. As you know, on one side, Poland borders with the Soviet Union. They hired a guide to smuggle us across because the borders were closed. The Soviets would not allow anyone to enter. But instead of taking us across the border, he left us on the no man's land. And I spent a few weeks under the open sky in the winter.
So you fled Poland with your family when you were about five.
Right. And the family was made up of, my immediate family was made up of four. My sister, 5 years my senior, yes.
And your two parents.
Right.
And so you fled to the Soviet Union. How did you end up in Siberia?
In the middle of the night, Soviet soldiers knocked on the cabin in which we shared with a few other families, picked us up, put us on cattle car trains, and shipped us to Siberia, to a Siberian labor camp deep down in the Siberian taiga, which covers the northern part of Russia.
Where were you living when that happened, when they knocked on your door?
We were outside of a city called Bialystok, where there are quite a number of clusters there of Jews from Poland. We were located in a wooded area, which must have been at one time the property of a wealthy landlord, and it had scattered small little wooden cabins, a few families to each cabin, which at one time must have been the residences for the workers. And this is when one night they knocked on the door, not knocked on the door, kicked in the door, and marched us to a long line of cattle cars.
And you were about five at that time?
Yes.
Do you remember that? What was that like?
Yes, I remember it very well, because it so happens that at that night, my sister and I were alone. My mother took the train to the city where my dad worked, not warning him not to come back because there was a rumor that our cluster was scheduled for a raid. And she missed the last train coming back to us. So that night, when they kicked the door in, my sister and I were alone. I remember it very well, being just horrified. What will happen without our parents? What would those soldiers do to us? And they told us to get our belongings in a few minutes, and we wrapped whatever we could in some sheets, I don't remember, and were dragging it a long way to the train station.
And then they took you to a labor camp, and You did meet up with your parents eventually, correct?
Yes.
How long were you in that labor camp?
I think 2 or 2.5 years.
And what was that like? Do you remember?
We were placed in tiny little houses right against the forest where the bears would come to the door front. There were a few families in one room sleeping on the floor. Everyone who had to work, including my sister, who was probably, 10, maybe 11, I don't know. And it was very scary because I was left alone. I tried to find some other children with whom to spend time. But in winter time, it was almost impossible because it was so extremely cold. The temperature in the winter would drop to 50 below, leaving the house without having layers and layers over your face felt like swallowing sharp objects. We didn't have any clothing for that climate. And also, it was dark most of the time in the winter. There were only about 3 or 4, probably no more than 3 hours of daylight. So it was very scary leaving the apartment, what it felt like, middle of the night, the darkness.
So you spent most of your time probably inside then?
I spent inside, and I would go out whenever possible. I did go out. After some point, the one store that existed got in some boots made up of some compressed fiber. And once I had those boots, I was more able to leave the house, yes, and looking for friends.
You said you would have bears come right up to your door.
Yes.
Was that scary?
I remember one situation where I saw those big eyes, shiny, that looked like two lanterns. And I was so scared. And I'm not in that same complex without having to go outdoors. Lived an older woman. And I ran to her and asked her to come and see what's going on. I didn't know what were those two flashing lights. Those were the eyes of a bear approaching. And I was so scared, I hung on to her until parents came home.
So you were there 2 or 2.5 years, and then you get moved to Uzbekistan.
Yes. Yes, they shipped us to Uzbekistan. But from what I understand, the Polish government that existed in exile in London came to some agreement with the Soviet Union through which they let the Polish citizens out of labor camps. The option was either you stayed on your own in Siberia or you were shipped to a southern republic. In our case, it was Uzbekistan. I am sure that my parents felt that going to a warmer climate, life would be much easier, and probably felt food would be more plentiful, because during Siberia, hunger, a constant hunger, was a daily part of my life.
So you moved to Uzbekistan.
Yes.
And things weren't as your family expected. Food was pretty scarce. What did you guys survive on?
Well, there were periods of time, prolonged periods of time, that we lived on boiled grass and leaves. My mother would go into the field, pick up anything green, wild growing. She would boil it, drink it first herself to see how she reacted to it. And when she didn't get sick from it, she would give it to us as well. There was one period of time that we lived on broiled onions. Some farmer must have had a good crop of onions, and in exchange for some of my mother's clothing, she got a bag of onions. My father tried to get work by walking from farmer to farmer and asking for work, willing to do anything in exchange of food. Once in a while, she would get a day's work, but most of the time not.
Try to put into words, if you can, what that hunger felt like.
You know, it's strange not responding to hunger, but to the whole situation, that I never know when I would choke up, I never know which experience, reliving will be the most difficult. You know, in general, and I would try to be more specific to my experience, in general, hunger not only depletes the child's body, but can deplete the soul. And often the soul goes before the body. For me, hunger was first of all an enormous physical pain, associating hunger with abdominal pain and with constantly thinking about food and a feeling of enormous, not restlessness, but search for something. The something was food, but I couldn't interpret it as such. It was just something to say, I don't want to feel the belly ache anymore. Yes. And thinking, what is edible, what I can eat. And I remember also experiencing anger at points when I saw my mother drink that boiled grass or whatever, and she didn't give it to me, and I was angry. How come she does it? And I would never say that to my mother. But I remember one night, and we all, when we were together in Uzbekistan, there were a few families to one hut on the floor laying. And I overheard my father asking Mom, if you give it to the kids, how do you know that this is not poisonous? And she says, didn't you notice? I drink it first myself. That was for me a great relief, hearing why my mother did it. Because, you know, of a child, the first thing she doesn't share it with you is she doesn't love you. You know, it's strange. It is the first time when I talk about not eating that I am crying.
No, you're fine. And then what happened from there? You ended up in an orphanage away from the rest of your family.
Yes. Well, my father died in Uzbekistan. And I was a few years in an orphanage in Uzbekistan. And with that orphanage, I returned to Krakow. And I spent another 4 or 5 years in orphanages there.
Tell me what it was like as a young girl to be in that situation, to be surrounded by extreme weather, poor food conditions, a lot of death. How did that impact you?
I'm trying to think how I reacted then, not how it impacted me long range, but how I reacted. I tried in every which way I could to keep myself busy, to involved in things. I did not think of myself that I am a poor person. I don't think I even understood the concept what it means to be poor. I knew that I was hungry. And somehow, first of all, I think I was always a child with a lot of energy, a bouncing. I am told that I never walked, but I hopped and I jumped. And I was very resourceful in finding way to entertain myself. I don't remember, as a very young child, even in Poland before the war, of having any toys. But I always was able to create some games with whatever objects existed in the house. And I think I tried to do that as well. And whenever I found some children, and I always was hanging around children older than myself, I found a kind of a community of kids. Was there a lot of anxiety? Yes. I didn't understand what was going on. My parents did not explain to me, and I'm sure out of good intention, thinking that maybe they are protecting me by not telling me what goes on. But the less I knew, the more anxious I was, and tried to eavesdrop on conversations of adults to find out what's going on around us.
Irene, you said that your Holocaust survival story is different than others. What do you mean by that?
When people think of a Holocaust survivor, their image is of someone, first of all, asking, do I have numbers on my arms, tattooed numbers? They think of people who were in concentration camps in Poland, or people who were in hiding in Poland. In that way, I was not in Poland most of the Holocaust area. I was elsewhere, so that is very different. And though I was in a camp, but it was a labor camp in the Soviet Union and not in Poland. And this was one of the reasons the University of Michigan was very much interested in me writing my story, because I am in the very small minority of people who survived the war in the manner I describe.
So would you say your story is not as difficult as some of the other people? Is that how you view it, would you say?
No, I view it as different. Not as difficult, but different. To be a starving child for years, because throughout the Holocaust, extreme hunger was a daily part of my life. To spend years in orphanages, with loneliness. I would not describe that as an exactly easy childhood.
You got put in the orphanage when you were in Uzbekistan, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And that was because your mom really couldn't...
Well, there were some Jews from Poland in Uzbekistan. I don't know who they were and how. And they set up orphanage and would come out to villages recruiting Jewish children from Poland, not just orphaned, but any child to the orphanage, because knowing what was the prevailing starvation, this was one way of saving the children from dying of starvation. So I was for a few years in the orphanage in Uzbekistan, and thereafter for 4 or 5 years after the war in Krakow.
So your dad died in Uzbekistan?
Yes.
Did you see your mom again?
Yes, I saw my mother. And when I was in the orphanage in Poland, in Krakow, my mother and my sister lived more or less in the same city. By more or less, I mean there was quite in different part at all. And I was periodically able to take public transportation and visit them.
I can't imagine experiencing everything you went through. Why do you feel like you need to tell your story to other people, and what do you want them to understand or to take away from your story?
First thing, and I don't know in what hierarchy or priority, first of all, I feel that this is the darkest chapter of human history, and it is important that we know about it, because history has a way of repeating itself. And we have to learn the indications of social injustices that can lead to a point of such a horror like a Holocaust. But very important for me is to use my Holocaust experiences to promote tolerance, because my life is an example what can happen when there is no tolerance, acceptance of diversity. Tolerance is not enough. Respect and acceptance of diversity, it is an example. And in many situations, I also use my life to point out when I am with children who live in different situations, to point out that we each have the power to overcome no matter what life dishes out. That you can become the person you want to be no matter how difficult life is. You never know how much strength you have until the circumstances call for it. Yes. And in everyone's life, there come some difficult times. No life is what they call just full of roses. And I want to serve as an example to show, yes, you can overcome it.
Are you bitter? Are you angry towards those who wronged you?
No. No, you know, I speak a lot. Since the University of Michigan published my memoir, Into No Man's Land, a historical memoir, I have been invited all over Michigan, in Ohio, also in Canada, and will speak any place where a group wants to hear me. And among all other questions and comments, I have almost from every group two reactions. First one is, you are too young to be a Holocaust survivor. And I said to them kiddingly, it's just an optical illusion. And then they say, but you are not angry. You are not bitter. No, I am not angry. I am absolutely not bitter. I feel that I have a lot of joy of living and a lot of love to share with others. When I speak about my Holocaust experiences, I relive it. And I never know when I will become emotional at some point. But beyond that, I don't live my Holocaust. I have a life very diverse. I enjoy the opera and the concert and the theater, have traveled a lot throughout the world, and live a full and normal life with good friends.
Final question, and then we'll wrap up here. So I came across this photo on your website of you and your little dog, and I want to hear if there's a story behind that photo.
You know, very often children, when I go to schools, ask me, what was the name of your dog? I don't know the dog. As a matter of fact, I was afraid of dogs, because living in the city in Warsaw, we had no place for pets. And my parents probably couldn't afford, quote, to waste money to feed a dog. And I didn't know anyone that had dog. But we were in a countryside, in a cottage, and someone must have apparently wanted me to take a picture with the dog. And you may notice I am not hugging the dog. I'm kind of holding it a little away from me because I was afraid to get the dog. I think it was a very brave acceptance on my part to take a picture with the dog, though I was afraid of dogs.